Welcome to the School of Batman, a podcast where we ask academics to help Batman fight crime using their research. I'm your host, Chris George, amateur scientist and professional Batman enthusiast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the case of the Broken Bat. We're pleased to be joined by Ali Khatibi. Ali has a PhD in psychology from KU Laval and is currently a postdoctoral researcher at the Montreal Neurological Institute at McGill University. So hi Ali, how are you and thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for inviting me. I'm very good and I'm excited to be with the School of Batman.
Fantastic, thank you very much. So yeah, we start generally with a little bit of a dive into people's histories and kind of connections between different areas of research and how they got to where they are today before we dig into the bat specific stuff. So you did your PhD in psychology and then moved on to your postdoctoral position at the Neurological Institute. And so that seems to me one thing is quite kind of physiological and then the other is more of a behavioral mental. Is there a direct connection there?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is a connection between our state of mind and how our body feels. My PhD was on the cognition of pain and the psychology of pain. And here, I tried to investigate the neurology of the pain and how people are different in perception of pain.
Is pain something that can be physically identified in the brain when it's experiencing it?
That's a really good question, and it is a big question today. If you go to a pain conference, a lot of people, they come around this question. If we put someone in the MRI and if we scan the brain of that person, if we can find a neurological signature of pain. Interestingly, there are quite a number of papers, they investigated this question and they said that there is a neurological signature of pain in the brain, and there are areas in the brain that are more responsible for the processing of pain in people. But still, those researchers, they don't dare to say that if you put someone in the scanner and you scan his or her brain, you can say that if this person is in pain or not, because what we call it pain, it is a subjective experience, and it is very difficult to objectify this subjective experience. We cannot give a rating, you cannot give a number to the pain someone else experiences. So that makes it a little bit difficult to develop a signature for the pain-related activation in the brain.
And where do you think the difficulties in identifying that physiologically lie? Is it an intractable problem, or is it a case of the machines that we use to identify these are not sophisticated enough, or we don't understand enough about the brain, or is it a combination of all of the above?
I think the problem comes from the fact that pain is not a unified experience. It's emotional, it has a social aspects, it has a physical aspect. The International Association for the Study of Pain defined pain as an emotional experience. This experience has social influences on people and can have emotional consequences on people. And when it lasts for a long period of time, it can be difficult for people to deal with it. So the problem comes from the fact that these factors, they vary between people, and it is not possible to measure all of them. If the pain, this person from 0 to 100, it is 20. If the person says that the pain is 20, the 20 for me is different from 20 you experience, Chris.
Sure, so I guess the idea of some kind of silver bullet of being able to identify this is what the brain is on pain and thus it can be reverse engineered is probably a fantasy at this point. Is there gradients that are potential to be achieved by identifying certain aspects of neurological activity?
Absolutely. There are more and more research diseases they are conducting on the brain and pain and the modulation of pain in the brain and in the central nervous system. Many researchers recently, they emphasize on the fact that we do not consider pain as isolated experience only in the brain. This is a collaboration between our spinal cord and the brain. And if we want to know the pain better, we have to see the whole image. We cannot just focus on the brain and not to see the involvement of other areas of the central nervous system, like the spinal cord, in the processing of the pain. So that is what I'm doing these days. I'm trying to develop measures to improve the sequences that we use to be able to scan the brain and the spinal cord together and to see how these two centers of processing, they work in collaboration to show their reaction to the pain.
And how important do you think your background in psychology is to what you're doing now? Do most people working in this field have that interdisciplinary approach?
That's interesting. When I go to the pain conferences and when I sit at a symposium, I see people from different backgrounds. They come together to make that symposium happen. People from the physics background, people from the neuroscience background, people from psychology background, people from medicine background, they come together to understand this phenomenon better. So my psychology background, it gives me the ability to realize that there are consequences, there are side effects of the pain for people, and to realize that the pain is a subjective experience. And if I want to find something objective about the pain, I have to always keep it in my mind that people are different, and you cannot find two people identical together when it comes to their definition of pain.
Great, thank you. I think it's time to go to your story now, so we can dig into some specifics. Before we start, we'd like to ask our guests to choose an actor to represent their Batman. Have you chosen somebody?
Yes, my Batman would be Christian Bale.
Very good choice indeed. So let's dig into your story. Batman's exhausted run-in with the monstrous Bane leaves the Bat with a broken back. A long road of recovery lies ahead, but Batman knows that crime is waiting and throws himself into it as hard as possible. Sparring and exercise lead to excruciating pain, more so than even the extensive injuries should cause. So much so that he even becomes fearful to train. What is going on with our hero, and how can he get over it? So this is an interesting situation that we were kind of alluding to earlier, some of the subjectivity and some interesting other areas that maybe we haven't explored. So he's coming back from a big injury, and he's experiencing very high levels of pain doing the activities that kind of were involved with his injury, but more than the injuries themselves should probably cause. So what might be going on here, Ali?
So a little bit of background about the fear of pain. When I said about the subjective experience of pain, when it comes to these experiences, people, they start to think about the physical aspect of pain. So what happens to their body when they are in pain? But then there are emotional aspect of pain. When they are in pain, they are sad. They cannot communicate with other people. It comes to the emotional aspect of pain. There are other consequences, like the economical aspect of pain, because if a person suffers from pain, he or she cannot go to work, and it influences the economic situation, and then social consequences of pain. So very nice model developed a few years ago by Johan Flynn and Stephen Linton. It's the fear avoidance model of chronic pain. So this model, it says that when someone experiences pain, this person has two choices. They cannot fear the pain, they can confront with their pain, and they can go to recovery. Or the other aspect is they can start to think negatively about the pain. So they start to catastrophize about this painful experience. So catastrophizing involves rumination about the pain. The person constantly thinks that he's in pain, the pain is something bad. And he or she tries to magnify the painful experiences. He or she says that when he or she suffers from the pain, it is something that they cannot tolerate. It's going to make them disabled forever. And then they think that they are helpless. There is no one, there is no medication, there is nothing in the world that can help them. And by catastrophizing about the pain, people, they start to develop fear of pain. Interestingly, we know that fear of pain is worse than the pain itself. There are studies that they show that fear of pain causes more disability than the pain itself. And interestingly, inside the bracket, it is not limited to the pain. It comes to other chronic diseases as well. So what happens there to Batman is the fact that Mr. Bane, or in the other Batman series, the Joker, they try to make people afraid. They try to develop fear in people. And Bane follows the Joker's line and tries to make Batman fearful of doing something. So that's why they leave Batman at the bottom of the pit. And his fears about what's happened to people without him being in Gotham. So when Bruce speaks with the blind prisoner, he talks about the fear of death. And the blind prisoner tells him that being attached to the rope, it's something that makes him attached to not to overcome the fear, not to accept the fear that it is in him. So that prevents Bruce or Batman from raising up and leaving his fear behind him and trying to go out of the pit without using the help of the rope.
So many interesting things you said there. I'm just going to dig into a few. So we're talking about the fear of pain often being worse than the pain itself. Are you talking there that the fear of pain causes a physical sensation of pain, or when you say it's worse than the pain itself, it's more debilitating in other ways?
It's debilitating in other ways, because when people, they become fearful of pain, they start to think about the activities that can be associated with that pain. So when a person thinks that picking a box from the floor and putting it on the table, when they are fearful of their pain, they're gonna avoid these activities. This result in disuse and depression and disability.
So is it an association, like Batman here, he's causing problems with his sparring and his exercise, because that's an association with what caused the initial injury and the initial pain? Or is it that any activity, can it kind of spiral into any activity?
Yeah, it can be any activity, because people, they start to generalize it. When it is in a small region, in a specific part of the body, people, they start to think about the pain in other parts of the body.
Right, okay. So what can we possibly do to help this out? How can we help him get back on his feet? How can we get him back training? And how can we get him back to sparring? What techniques are available?
So what people, they try to do based on the fear avoidance model of chronic pain. So this, the vicious circle of catastrophizing pain-related fear, avoidance, and disuse, it should be broken. So we should break this circle to make people believe that they can recover, they can go to the other side of the circle, which there is no fear, there is confrontation with the fear, and there is recovery. So what we try to do is to try to change the cognition of people. How we can try to help Batman is to change the cognition of Batman about the pain, about his body, when he thinks that the body can be in pain.
And what approaches would you take to do that?
There are a number of ways scientists, they try to change cognition. For example, when we talk about the cognition, we talk about the cognitive bias. We speak about a pattern of thinking, a pattern of behavior. And when we say cognitive bias, we say about like attentional bias. People, they pay more attention to the pain than any other cue that exists in their body or surrounding them. So we can try to teach people, can try to help Batman to not to pay attention to the pain, instead to pay attention to the goal that person has to achieve. So the goal of Batman here is to go out of the pit and help people of Gotham. The other approach is, which I think this is the most important part of my work these days, that we think that maybe changing interpretation of people about the symptoms that they have in their body. So if a person wakes up in the morning and finds something weird about one of his joints, he or she may think that this is something bad and something bad is going to happen to me today. But we try to change cognition of people by training them to think positively when it comes to ambiguous bodily symptoms, and to change negative interpretation bias to a more positive interpretation bias.
That almost sounds too good to be true. Have you had any positive results with these tactics?
So most of the things that we did, it was with people without chronic pain, but we did some research with people with increased level of health anxiety. We had people that they were afraid of bodily symptoms more than other people. Previously, we called these people hypochondriac. Now the term has been changed slightly and it goes under the umbrella of health anxiety. So we tried to change cognition of these people by a simple application. We gave them some scenarios, some ambiguous scenarios with unfinished words at the end, and we asked them to find the best word which matches the end of their story. And then we showed them some words and we asked them if they were thinking that the word we show, it is confirming what they were thinking before, or it is against what they were thinking before. We tried to reinforce people's choices when they were making non-health related choices compared to the situation that they were making health related choices. So in this way, we were teaching people to think about something which is not related to their health condition when it comes to ambiguous bodily symptoms.
Are these ideas connected to, let me try and explain what I'm trying to say. So if I see somebody doing an activity on a video, or I see it in real life, let's say they're doing parkour or something, and they break a leg or they fall over and take a massive tumble. So not only will I get that immediate sense of kind of wincing and being like, ooh, and kind of like empathy pain to them, but also it will make me more fearful of possibly doing that activity myself. Are these ideas connected?
Exactly. So that's very interesting, because it goes back to my PhD, and a big part of learning in pain is observational learning. My colleagues in Leuven, they were doing research that they were showing people immersing their hand in water. These people, that people they were observing afterward, they showed either a painful expression or a non-painful expression. So people, they were seeing other people immersing their hand in the water, and they didn't know anything about the water, but they were thinking that this water can be a really cold water, a freezing water. So if you immerse your hand in it after something like 4 or 5 seconds, you can experience excruciating pain. Afterward, they asked people to see if they are willing to put their hand in that cold water and to experience the pain of that person or not. And interestingly, people who were observing people with more painful expressions, they were avoidant of doing the activity.
Right, so I guess that's probably quite a healthy evolutionary instinct back in the day. But as we're exposed to more visuals and more stimulus and things like that going on, that can cause problems with people.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at it from the evolutionary perspective, it is necessary for people to understand pain in the facial expression of other people. So it increases their own chances of survival. At the same time, it was necessary for the mothers to understand, for example, the pain in the face of a baby, so they can help the baby as well. So it is for the survival of the person at the first place. And of course, it is important for the survival of the genes, because then people, when they can see pain in faces of other people, they can go and help that person. So this is another equation here. It is still open for the researchers. And we don't know that if we see a pain, what causes some people to go toward the pain and help that person, and what causes people to avoid it and to escape the situation.
This might not be within your area of research, but Do you know if people have different levels of sophistication in understanding perception of pain in others from things like facial cues, body language?
Actually, this is very much very related to my research, because I did most of my research on the facial expression of pain. So there are individual differences in understanding of pain in facial expression of other people, or some other researchers they showed on the understanding of the bodily expression of pain. These differences, it goes back to there is some kind of cultural background. In some cultures, people, they tend to show pain more than some other cultures. So when people, they come from those cultures, they are trained about understanding of pain in facial expression of other people, because they are used to seeing pain in the faces of other people. But when it comes to some other cultures, that people, they are less trained, they exposed less to the pain of other people, they develop some kind of resilience. It is true in when it comes to people's exposure to the pain and the situation that they are in. For example, there are some studies they showed that if you expose a person to a painful expression 100 times, and if you show the expression after 100 time of exposure, the person thinks that that pain is less intense than when the person sees that painful expression for the first time. So again, a lot of different factors, they can influence people's understanding of pain in the expression of another person.
So any final thoughts then, Ali, and what would you like people to kind of take away from this about the idea of pain and pain research?
Pain is a disease itself. It's now that DSM, they recognize pain as a disease, as a disorder. The chronic pain is a classified disorder itself. But the pain is a symptom of many other diseases as well. When we talk about the cancer, the pain is a big consequence of cancer treatment. When we talk about the other chronic diseases like the MS or like the Parkinson, pain is a symptom that exists in these people. So researchers from all different disciplines, they try to work together to reduce the pain in people suffering from chronic diseases and people with other problems.
That's it for today. Thanks to Ali's research, Batman can get back out on the streets of Gotham, fighting crime and his nemesis as soon as possible. So thanks to Ali for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to find out more about Ali and his research, you can find him on Twitter. The link will be in the description of the episode. If you'd like to be a future guest on the podcast, please email us at info@figshare.com. And you can find us on Twitter at School of Batman.